All right, everybody, welcome back. So we are in the middle of our series on the halachos of Tisha B'Av. Last time around, we spoke about the morning practices of Tisha B'Av. Today we're going to discuss many of the common questions that have to do with the inuyim of Tisha B'Av, the five different afflictions of Tisha B'Av that include eating and drinking, bathing, anointing, leather shoes, and marital relations. We'll try to get to all of them. We're obviously won't be able to cover each one totally comprehensively, but we'll try to get to a number of common questions within each category. Before we get to that, just as a little hakdama, a little introduction, so what exactly is the nature of the five inuyim, the five afflictions on Tisha B'Av? So at first glance, we could compare most of the inuyim. Let's put eating and drinking aside. Let's just talk about rechitza, sicha, ni'ila, sasandal, tashmish, hamita. There are two other times where a person would refrain from such activities besides for Tisha B'Av. What are the two? Yom Kippur and?
Shiva.
And Shiva, and Avelos. Exactly. So the question that the Achronim dealt with... Sorry? Yeah, that's why I said put eating to the side. And actually, that's going to be relevant in a second. Okay? So the question that that the Achronim deal with is, to what should we compare the afflictions on Tisha B'Av? Should we compare it more to Yom Kippur? Or should we compare it more to Shiva? In other words, if we lumdicize the language over here, should we say that it's a din, that the afflictions are a din in tainis? That on a full-fledged tainis, like Yom Kippur or Tisha B'Av, it comes along with these inuyim, and we afflict ourselves as an expression of our fasting? Or should we say it's a din in avelus, because Tisha B'Av is also a day of mourning, just like we saw last week? So we're going to, the truth is that there's evidence in both directions. I'll give you one piece of evidence in for each, okay? So evidence that it's a din in mourning. So the Gemara in Tainis Daf Lamed Amud Aleph, we saw it last week, says, Kol mitzvos ha-noagos ba'avel, noagos b'tisha b'av. And then it goes on to delineate the different afflictions. So it would seem that it's more of a din in avelus. However, as Barry pointed out, that line begins with eating and drinking. And eating and drinking is not really part of, there's no iser to eat and drink during avelus. It's actually a mitzvah to drink wine during avelus. There's a, or to have a suda savra, not during aninos, during avelus. Not to get drunk, Avi, just a little bit. Okay. Okay. Yeah. It's the yayin helps soothe the pain. Okay, but during aninos there's an iser to have wine, but during avelos it's totally mutter to have wine. So on the one hand we could compare it to avelos, but on the other hand we're mentioning things that have nothing to do with avelos that really seem to have to do with a tainis. And even with respect to some of the overlap, so for example, in Avel and both on Yom Kippur and during Avelos, you're not allowed to wash yourself, right? But it's not exactly the same thing. During Avelos, you're not allowed to wash in I'm not getting into the halacha l'maaseh of this, but you're not allowed to wash in hot water. And also, you can't wash the entire body in cold water. But on Yom Kippur, you can't even place a finger into any water. So it's not exactly the same. And with respect to that, what do we say about Tisha B'Av? Say that about Tisha B'Av, it's the same as Yom Kippur. So it seems more like a din in the tainis, not in the avelus. So depending on where you look, we compare Tisha B'Av in both directions. The Brisker Rav says that there's tzvei dinim, there's two dinim in the halachos of Tisha B'Av, and we'll come on to a theory later about exactly how to parse out these two different elements. Okay, so that's just a little hakdam. Let's get into eating and drinking, the first one of the five afflictions. What happens if you have a person who needs to break his fast or who's not able to fast even from the beginning of the day? So I'm not going to discuss tonight who those people are. That lies beyond the scope of our shiur. That's a separate shiur. If you think that you may fall into that category, certainly ask a shaila. Don't be afraid to ask a shaila. Always err on the side of caution and ask a shaila. But if you do fall into the category and you're going to be eating on Tisha B'Av, so then what are the halachos that apply? So the Mishnah Berurah in source number one quotes from the Ilyar Rabba that even somebody who's not fasting on Tisha B'Av, such as a Yoledes, someone who's given birth recently, so that person should be Tis'ana Eza Sha'os, should still fast for a little bit. So even though you know from the very get-go that you're not going to fast the whole day, you should still fast for a little bit. And Chai Adam applies the same thing to a chole. If you're a chole, she'im bo sakana. And you also are not going to fast the whole day. The doctors told you it's not a good idea. So you should still fast Eza Sha'os if you're able to. If you're not able to, there's nothing to talk about. But if you're able to fast some hours of the day, then you should do so. Why? So you could explain this in one of two ways. Either you could say that you're only potter from fasting once you reach the point where you're really no longer able to fast. Right? But as long as you're able to fast, you have to fast. That's one way of saying it. The second way of saying it is that no. Once you're not included in the fast, so you're not included from the get-go. We're going to see in just a second that according to some, Chazal, we're not gozer the fast on a chole. The fast just doesn't apply to you. So then why should you fast for a little bit? So the Achronim explained, because you should be together with the Tzara of the rest of the community. The entire community is experiencing the Tzara of Tisha B'Av, and the way that they're expressing that is by refraining from eating and drinking. So too, you should partake in that expression of the Tzara to the best of your ability. The best of your ability is for a couple hours, so then that's what you should do. So that's the that's point number one. What about somebody who starts his fast, and then he needs to break it, but then he feels strong again. He feels, you know, healthy again. He's able to continue fasting after he breaks the fast. Is there any idea to continue fasting? What do you think? Avi, I saw you. What are you thinking?
Why should I?
Why? You already broke it, right? Yeah. So there's nothing left. Okay.
Okay. You say the same thing as you said before, that you want them to still feel with the community.
I did it till 12 o'clock, I'm done.
It wasn't one of the reasons you said before.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So if you take a look in source number 4, of Sternbach quotes from the Brisker Rav, who quotes from his father, from Chaim Soloveitchik, that Chazal weren't gozer on a chola at all. And even if you fast for a little bit and then you stop, there's really no idea to continue because you're not chayv in the fast. So it's not like, you know, it's not like at every moment you have to be fasting. So therefore, he says that there's no need to continue fasting. However, Rav Vosner quotes from the Chasam Sofer that it is a good idea, if you're able to continue fasting afterwards. And the idea could be explained in one of two ways. Either they're like looking at the fast differently. Like, do we look at the fast as like a conglomerate? Like there's the day that you have to fast. And once you've broken it, it's like Avi said. So, you know, game's over. So if that's the case, then okay, there's nothing to talk about once you broke it. But if you look at it more as like moment by moment, that at every moment you're supposed to be fasting, so then every moment is a different Shiloh. So if you're able to fast at this moment, then you should fast. That's one way of saying it. Another way of saying it is what Uri said, that even if we say, okay, you don't really technically have to fast, but it's still a good idea to be mitzta'er together with the tzibur as much as you can. And the Chasam Sofer really takes that to the nth degree. He says, only eat as much as you need, right? Like, don't try to overdo it. Everybody would agree that if you are eating on Tisha B'Av, that certainly you shouldn't engage in like ta'anugim. You certainly shouldn't have an elaborate, you know, meal, an elaborate breakfast or lunch. You know, you just eat what you need in order to feel healthy. But whether you should continue fasting or not, that's really a machlokas. I would say that it seems to be that most agree with Reb Chaim that you don't have to continue fasting. But again, it's certainly a good idea to do so if you're able to. Last thing, yeah.
Doesn't realize it's over. He started with eating enough. Whoops, I
already broke my fast. Right. So I guess that would be an achamina between the two different ways that I said it, right? Like if you think that it's a din in like the conglomerate and that like if you haven't fasted at one point, so then it would be the same. Right. I would assume that in that case we would tell the person to continue fasting. Again, because you have tutzavim to tell him to continue fasting. Number one, you could the every moment svara, and number two, that he should be together with the team. So the third question is, when you have somebody who's not fasting, is there an idea of that person using shiurim on Tisha B'Av? It's a question that arises, you know, like every year. So we know about this concept from Yom Kippur. Yeah, if you have someone who's pregnant, someone who just gave birth, a chole, who's not able to fast on Yom Kippur, so we know that we feed them shiurim. We give them less than a full shear that would constitute a violation of the fast on a d'oraisa level, so they're only breaking the fast on a d'rabbanan level. Okay? Now, would you say the same thing when it comes to Tisha B'Av to reduce the amount of food so that the violation of the fast is not as severe? So the Bir Halacha quotes a machlokas about this. He says, Ayin b'sefer pischei olam, this is in source number 5, Yochal pachos mikakoseves v'chtei achilas pras v'chein b'shesia. So the Pesachai Olam says that you should do shiurim on Tisha B'Av just as you would on Yom Kippur. However, many of the other achronim disagree with this Sefer Pesachai Olam. The Aruch HaShulchan, for example, says very clearly, source number 6, pachos mikashir lo shayach b'Tisha B'Av shehu midirabanan. It's derabanan to begin with, so the whole concept of shiurim is not going to apply. Shiurim will apply when we're trying to reduce something from a deoraisa to a derabanan. But if it's the Rabbanan to begin with, and the Rabbanan said that a chola can eat, so then the Rabbanan didn't say that he has to eat b'shiurim. And then how would you explain, hold on 1 second, how would you explain that pischei olam? So take a look at 7, Rav Vosner has an interesting explanation. He says, Umash even b'bir halacha, k'var amarti har b'pa'amim, she'in din chatz yishir b'tisha b'av, k'stimas kol ha'poskim. V'divrei ha'pischei olam she'vi abir halacha, inyan acher hu, b'choli ha'kalera rachmana litzlan, sho'ochlim ha'birim raklim noah. So the Rav Vosner explains that when the Bir Halacha was saying to do shiurim, that was for people who are perfectly healthy, but they needed to eat in order to prevent themselves from getting sick. There was such a contagious disease that apparently the way that they prevented themselves from getting diseased was by continuing to eat. I'm not sure exactly about the science, but that was what was happening. So if you're eating as a precaution, as a preventative measure, so then you should eat less than the shiurim because you're not even a chole. Really, you should be fasting, right? But if you are a chole, so then the Rabbanan said you don't have to fast. So there's no idea of shiurim. And the Tzitz Eliezer of Waldenberg in source number 8, he concludes halacha lamaisa that you do not need to do shiurim v'amachmir yachmir la'atzmo. If you want to be machmir for this sefer pischei olam, so that's a valid chumrah. But we wouldn't paskin that chumrah for everybody, for the hamon am. The basic fundamental halacha is that you don't need to do shiurim at Tisha B'Av if you are someone who is within the category, if not fast. Yeah, back.
There's no karis on Tisha.
Correct, right. So that's the reducing from deoraisa to derabanan. You saw that Aruch HaShulchan said at Tisha B'Av is derabanan to begin with, so therefore this whole idea of shiurim is not going to apply. Okay, so ad kan for eating and drinking when you have somebody who needs to break the fast. Now let's get into rechitza. What type of bathing, what type of washing is prohibited on Tisha B'Av? Take a look at source number 9. This is the Shulchan Aruch based on the Gemara Pesachim, Daf Nun Dalet. Rechitza asur b'Tisha B'Av, bein bechamin, bein betzonin. It doesn't matter whether the water is hot or cold. You're not allowed to wash yourself on Tisha B'Av. Afilu lahoshit etzvo b'mayim aser. Even to just stick a finger into the water would be prohibited. And that is how we compare Tisha B'Av to Yom Kippur. That's what we referenced before. However, there are some exceptions to this rule. Im hayu yadav miluchlachus betetu v'tzoa. If your hands are dirty with mud or with feces and different waste, puter lerchotz lahavir halichloch. So then you can wash your hands in order to get rid of the dirtiness. You should try not to wash your entire hand. You just wash away the part that is dirty. The Rama adds, "Vim asat tzrachav im muter lerchotz dino kamobiyom kipper vayin the kaman simin tafresh gimel yud gimel sev gimel." So if you go to the bathroom, you would certainly, if you had a bowel movement, you would certainly be allowed to wash your hands after leaving the bathroom up until the knuckles, even with soap. And if you just urinated, so it depends how dirty you got. But again, you can certainly wash up until the knuckles. So, and then when it comes to the Netila Sedayim, so we pass in on Tisha B'Av that you do Netila Sedayim, again, up until the knuckles. So what is this idea that you can wash in order to get rid of something that is on the hand? So the Mishnah Berurah in source number 10 says, Mutar lerchotz la'avir v'chulei, de'eino asur ela rechitza shel tanuk. This is the key line. The only type of washing that's prohibited on Tisha B'Av is a washing that's of a type of, you know, joyous nature, or, you know, you're trying to, you know, of a pleasure type of nature. However, when you're just washing in order to get rid of something, so there's no pleasure involved. What's the nafkamina? If your wife is making a meal for the breakfast and she's cooking some meat and she wants to wash off the meat, after mimeilo rochetz as gam yodeha muter, even though in so doing she's going to wash her hands, nonetheless it will be perfectly permitted to wash the meat. Because what she's doing is washing the meat, and it's not a rechitza shel tanuk. So the question becomes, where exactly do we draw the line with rechitza shel tanuk? So I'll give you two applications. Number one, what happens when you're washing dishes? Now, we said last week not to wash dishes in the morning because you don't want to have a hesach hadas from the avilos. But the poskim say that in the afternoon, if you need the dishes, you could wash the dishes. So are you allowed to wash the dishes? You're going to be washing your hands at the same time as you're washing the dishes. That's question number one.
Bathroom would be we just said the bathroom you can only do up to the knuckles.
You can only wash the parts that are dirty. Right.
Right, but if it's not a rechitza shel tanuk, it's clearly not.
It's not a rechitza shel tanuk.
So
yeah.
Why should there be any rules? You should just be able to wash your hands. It's not a rechitza shel tanuk.
Well, we're saying, I think if there were parts below the knuckles that were dirty, so then you could wash those parts.
Right, but according to this, with Nashim HaBadvashos, it doesn't seem like there's any rules.
Right, you don't draw the line at knuckles.
It's not rechitza shel tanuk. That's also not rechitza shel tanuk. So why are we so careful when it comes to after the bathroom, but we're not here?
Mm-hmm. So again, after you're leaving the bathroom, you're washing in order to clean the hand, right?
Right. Even if you wash your whole hand, you're still washing to clean your hand. It's not because, oh, I want to wash my hands, I want to feel nice, clean, you know.
Right, but we're saying that if there's no part, if you're washing a part of the hand that wasn't actually dirty, so then, in Achinami, your kavana is to clean, but like,
nowadays,
does it need...
You
because generally we wash our hands after going to the bathroom.
Right, fully.
Right.
Maybe when a woman is, you know, washing the knee, getting wet is sort of a secondary
consequence.
Yeah, it's indirect. It's, mm-hmm.
Whereas when you're washing your hands after going to the bathroom,
that's
you're directly washing. So you have to be more careful. Could be. Tzarechim, we have to figure out these. I spent a lot of time today trying to figure out exactly where to draw the line. There was another discussion about what about if you want to give, let's say your child is all dirty, right? They were playing, they got all muddy, and now they can't go to sleep like that. You need to give them a bath. So can you give them a bath on Tisha B'Av? I mean, they're dirty, right? So you could, let me preface it like this. If they're not dirty and it's just you want to give them a bath because every day you give them a bath, that you shouldn't do on Tisha B'Av. Because the Mishnah Berurah points out in Hilchos Yom HaKippurim that nowadays we don't consider our children cholim, that they need to get a bath every single day. They'll be perfectly fine if they don't have a bath for one day. So if it's just getting into pajamas without a bath, that will wait. But what if they actually got very dirty? So you need to wash them off. Certainly you would be allowed to wash them off. You're allowed to wash yourself off if you got dirty. So you'd certainly be allowed to wash your kid off, right? But in this case, let's say you give them a bath, you're going to be washing your hands even though you're not dirty, right?
But isn't that like what the story over here about the meat?
Yeah.
So you think that that's similar to the meat?
Yeah.
That's what I thought at first glance also. I thought that too. Scott, what do you think? Is it putting the hands in the water for the bath similar to the meat? That's what I thought also. So I thought there was a chumrah that I saw that seemed to be a chumrah to me. But I'll tell you why they said like this. So if you take a look at source number 15, say for Nite Gavriel. Nite Gavriel is a whole set on Halach Lamaisa. Very, very comprehensive svarim. So he writes in source number 15 that whenever you wash the dishes, it would be good to wear gloves when you wash the dishes. That way the water doesn't actually get on your hands. And he says the same thing if you're going to wash a child. Don't make him a bath, unless it's really necessary. Where like the whole body is all dirty. If it's just the kid's feet, So wash off the feet. You don't have to make a bath to wash off the feet. The whole kid got all, all dirty, so you make a bath. Va'az yilbishu bati yadai. And you should also wear gloves when washing the child. So why is this? Where did the gloves come from? So I thought like you guys. I thought, you saw in the Mishnah Berurah that if you're washing food to prepare and it's indirect, that it's perfectly fine. Mishnah Berurah didn't say you have to wear gloves. So this comes from a different understanding of where we draw the line at Rechitza Shel Tanug. Because there's a number of proofs that the Achronim bring to this. I'll quote you one of them. In Hilchos Yom HaKippurim, sources number 13 and 14, so the Mishnah Berurah writes that if a child were a chole with respect to getting washed, right? So he needed to be washed on Yom Kippur. But not a chole sheyash bo sakana, a chole as a kid. So the Mishnah Berurah says, the Rama says, source number 12, Umuter lomar lenochri lerochtzon ulesuchan. You can ask a non-Jew to wash the kid on Yom Kippur. The implication is that you can't wash the kid yourself. You can ask the non-Jew to wash the kid. And that's what the Mishnah Berurah writes in source number 13.
It's like a Michael Trifle saying.
I don't think it's a because he said in the Rama says that you can feed him the food. I think the idea is that you, and look at the Beis Yosef in 14. Look at the Beis Yosef. Umedivri Rabbeinu Shukasa, B'Shem Rabbeinu Yehuda, Nira, De Laha'achilan Hagal Dabi Yodayim Shari. That's fine, because you're not doing anything. Ava Laharchitzanu L'Suchan, Omer L'Goyva Ose. You should ask the non-Jew to do it. Ava Lo Yerchot Tzviyasuch Osam Hagal Dabi Yodav. Venire says the Beis Yosef, She'atam, Mepnei She'agodol Be'atzmo Ne'ne Me'osa Rechitza V'sicha, Shu Be'atzmo Rochitz V'sach Yodav, Kishemarchitz V'sach Hatinuk. Beis Yosef says that when you're going to wash or you're going to smear the child, you yourself are going to benefit from that action, because as part of giving the kid a bath, you're going to be washing yourself. As part of putting the Avino on the kid, you're going to be moisturizing your own hands.
Does he ever wash the
kid? What?
It's almost like the Beis Yosef washes on me.
Oh, it's, I thought you were talking about me. I was like, yeah, I watched it.
Okay.
So some Achronim bring a raya from here. Well, let's speak this out, right? In this case also, you have no intention to wash your hands. You're just trying to wash the child, right? It's not shel tanug. It's like what Rabbi Bilbi's saying. No, you don't want to give the kid the bath. You'd rather not give the kid the bath, right? So what...
Like, when I put hand cream on my daughter,
yeah,
so I'll put the extra on my own hands.
So you get an indirect benefit. But would you say the same thing about the? You say the same thing about the bath?
That's what the Beis Yosef is saying.
No, I understand that's what the Beis Yosef is saying. So where? How far should we take the Beis Yosef? Because the Achronim take the Beis Yosef to mean that even if it's not like you're intending it for tanug, if it's not that you're intending it for some other purpose, then it's like the default is shel tanug.
Anyway,
and that's why they say wear the gloves when you're washing the dishes.
But
why didn't the Mishnah Berurah say to wear the gloves when you're washing the meat?
The Mishnah Berurah though is by
because the meat dirties you.
That's a health hazard if you don't do it. The Mishnah Berurah is also I think it's just a chilek between Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur.
The din of Rechitza is the same at Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur.
I'm just saying. It's like, it's you know, be able to be like that.
Sorry?
Very,
like 1900s. Is he still alive?
He's still alive.
Still alive. Okay.
So, I didn't know. He's
sure didn't have rubber gloves.
Uh-huh. He just didn't have rubber gloves.
So it's like an up-to-date cocktail, but...
There was no other option.
He doesn't say to have an Akum to the beak.
Is there any Indian that, you know, we're, you know, they're comparing, you know, they're treating like babies as though they're meat, right? But is there any Indian of chinuch or that, you know, they really shouldn't be...
Yeah, so once the child...
Bath, but we let them have a bath because...
Well, once the child reaches the age of chinuch, then they shouldn't be washed. And then... I mean, honestly, it doesn't really make a difference because you shouldn't be washing anybody unless they're dirty. If the kid is 7 years old, he's reached the age of chinuch, but he's dirty, then he could be washed just like you could be washed if you were dirty, right?
He spent the day outside with his mother with suntan lotion.
So, okay, listen, you know, it's I'm not sure. I think Tzarechian still on this Inyan. But halacha lamaisa, it's you know, certainly no downside to putting on the gloves. You know, that you know, that way the water doesn't actually come into contact. So it's a good etza for washing the dishes and washing the children when you need to, if you're concerned again for this this BCOC. Okay, a couple more things within mouthwashing. Here we get up to within washing. So here we get up to Avi's highlight of the night. So Avi asked me to speak about the Listerine strips. So there's really two different issues when it comes to Listerine strips. One is achila, and the other is rechitza. Why rechitza? So the Rav Moshe, take a look at source number 17. Rav Moshe says, this is from Rabbi Eider Sefer. Rav Moshe says not to wash with mouthwash on Tisha B'Av because he thinks that washing the inside of the mouth is like washing the body. Rav Shechter wasn't so sure about that, but Rav Moshe does think that. If you think that, now, at the same time, the it's quoted there from the Chai Adam, that if you're somebody who really needs the mouth washed, because the Mishnah Brura has leniencies over here for an istinus, for someone who's very finicky, someone who's very particular with his body, he feels very uncomfortable when he's not, when his face is not washed or when his mouth is not washed. So the achronim are makil for such a person as long as they are careful not to try not to swallow the mouthwash, even though it's probably not right achila, but still you try your best not to swallow it. And they say the same thing about brushing the teeth, that if you're somebody who, you know, you can go a day without brushing the teeth, so it's better not to brush the teeth. Or you should at least brush the teeth without water. Try to brush the teeth without water. If you're somebody who's really like, it's really going to bother you a lot. So Diane Weiss says you could wash even with the water as long as you're careful not to swallow the water. So when it comes to the Listerine strips, if you think that, you know, if you're somebody like, you know, you really, really need the mouthwash, so then, okay, I understand. But if you're somebody who you could do without it, so Rav Moshe already says not to use the mouthwash because he considers it like rechitza. Not so clear that that's the case. But as I said before, Rav Shachter is not so sure about Rav Moshe's application of rechitza to the inside of the body. But then there's a second issue of the achila. So this is where the whole tumult comes. And he's cocking up his hat over here. So Rav Shachter was quoted a number of years ago, and I actually listened live today to, well, not live to Rav Shachter, but live to the recording, where Rav Shachter did say a whole number of years ago that you could have Listerine strips on Yom Kippur and on Tisha B'Av, because he didn't consider them to be real achila. And they are marketed as like just freshening the mouth. However, there are many people who treat them like food, where like they, you've never seen this? People just pop them. They like, especially the cinnamon ones, those, they taste good. So I'm not sure, because I read this as hearsay, so I'm not positive about this. This is where I don't know if Scott, if you've heard.
I heard the same thing.
That he went, that Rav Shechter retracted this psak later on. I also heard Bashim Rav Asher Weiss, not like Rav Shechter's psak. Did you hear that?
No.
Okay, fine. So anyway, I heard that Rav Shechter retracted his psak. He decided that once the Listerine strips started tasting good, then he wasn't comfortable with having people use them on Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av. So Lefi Anias Daiti, it's better to refrain from it, but you're welcome to ask a follow-up time. I won't. I still want Avi to come back. So,
But it's still not the achila part. You're saying because it started to taste good, now it's achila.
Right. So there are two different issues to keep track of. Number one is the achila part. And Rav Shachter, I think, was in the retraction, he was concerned that it might be achila. The second one is the rechitza, which would depend on like how much you really need it, like how much does it bother you without it? Yeah, in this case would be fine. Yeah, exactly. Okay, all right. So rechitza, it's again tzarechian on some of these issues. They get a little complicated, but that's what we have for tonight. So now next, let's get into sicha. The next ones are very much more clear cut. So what about when it comes to anointing? So the Shulchan Aruch in source number 19 says, Sicha ina asura ela shel tainug. So the Shulchan Aruch also says that when you anoint yourself, the only one when you, you know, smear, the only types of smearings that are asur are those that are for pleasure. So the beer, very important beer halach in source number 20, he infers, ulefizeh, pashut lahavir es hazoama mutter. If you're using the anointments just to remove a bad smell, so then that would be mutter. Because that's not shel tainug. You're not doing that so you have a nice fragrance. You're not doing that because, you know, you enjoy it. You're doing it because you want to get rid of body odor.
That's deodorant versus cologne.
Ah, good. So cologne, for sure, we would say no. Deodorant, according to the Bir Halacha, perfectly mutter. Now, happens to be...
deodorant has, like, fresh smell?
Scent, right. So they say it's better to use unscented deodorant. Again, if you're using the deodorant because... if you're using it not because you like, you think of your deodorant as cologne, but it's just like, yeah, so, you know, so then as long as you're using the deodorant because you want to get rid of the body odor, so then that would be fine. Now, not everybody agrees. If you look in source number 21, Rav Elyashiv is quoted as saying that one should not use deodorant on Tisha B'Av. And we should note that when it comes to Yom Kippur, everybody agrees that lahavir es hazoama, to get rid of a smell, would not be an exception. So Rav Willig wondered, why would we distinguish between Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur? We follow, when it comes to Rechitza and when it comes to Sicha, we seem to pattern Tisha B'Av after Yom Kippur. So just as on Yom Kippur, Lahavir es hazoama is not an exception, so too it should not be an exception on Tisha B'Av. And Karava, Rav Willig Paskin, the one should not use deodorant on Tisha B'Av. And he made a joke that on Tisha B'Av is where you really get to see whether they last for 24 hours. Okay? So, however, that was and Rav Elyashiv passed in that way as well. It's, you know, I don't want to pass in against my Rebbe, but there are many, many Achronim who say, like, and it already goes back to the Bir Halacha, that one is allowed to use deodorant on Tisha B'Av in order to get rid of a smell, or as long as something is not Shal Tainug, then it would be perfectly permitted. So I would not paskin for the shul and for the rabbin that you couldn't use deodorant on Tisha B'Av. Not talking about Yom Kippur right now, on Tisha B'Av. If one wants to be machmir, and you're also not going to bother the person next to you in shul. So,
and
so
they'll use deodorant?
Yes. But here we're comparing to, Rav Willig's point was, what we should be comparing Tisha B'Av to Yom Kippur. Not to Avelos. And it's a din, it goes back to the Chakira that we spoke about at the beginning of the year. It's a din in Tainus, not just a din in Avelos.
What's the din about why you're saying Yom Kippur might be different?
Because on Yom Kippur, we are machmir, not for that this exception of Lahavir es hazoama does not apply. Yeah.
Maybe we're not being really comparing it to this Yom Kippur Lagami.
Oh, good. So you know what? That gets us to a point in Lomdus. I wasn't going to go here because, you know, the hour is a little late. But so the Rav in the Shiurei Harav, you know, Rav Konigsberg's Shiurei Harav on Hilchos Tisha B'Av. Do you have that?
I have two copies.
Okay. So did I put it down over here? No, I didn't put it down. But what he says is like this. Very, very sharp lumpus. Remember at the beginning of this year, we said that Tisha B'Av could be compared to either Yom Kippur or to Avelos. The Rav says it's compared to both in different ways. Says that when we're coming to characterizing the type of Isser, we compare it to Avelos. When we're speaking about the gradation or the quantity of the Isser, the extent of the Isser, we compare it to Yom Kippur. So let me give some more concreteness to that distinction. Okay? So let's take Rechitza and Sicha. When it comes to Rechitza, the halachos of Tisha B'Av look exactly like the halachos of Yom Kippur. When it comes to Sicha, the halachos of Tisha B'Av don't look exactly like Yom Kippur. And the Rav wondered why. So he said like this. Rechitza is... there's only one way to think about the Isser of Rechitza. The Isser of Rechitza is to not have Tainuk. You could draw the line wherever you want, but as much as you refrain from washing yourself, you are inflicting discomfort upon yourself. That's the Isser of Rechitza. So there's one Isser of Rechitza. There are different places as to where we draw the line as to how far you go. How much are you not allowed to wash? So there we look to Yom Kippur for the answer. Because remember, we always look to Yom Kippur for the gradation. On Yom Kippur, you're not allowed to wash anything. So therefore, on Tisha B'Av, you're not allowed to wash anything. But when it comes to Sicha, when it comes to anointing, you could view the Isser in two different ways. You could say that there's an Isser of a Maisa Sicha, of just putting the ointment on the body. That's Yom Kippur. That's why even Sicha She'ina Shal Tainug is going to be Aser on Yom Kippur. But when it comes to Tisha B'Av, we look to Avelus. And Avelus, why is an Avel not allowed to anoint himself? Because he's trying to refrain from Tainug. He's trying to refrain from bodily pleasures. So we that's how we look at it on Tisha B'Av, where, again, the Sicha is characterized as an Isser Tainug. And therefore, anything that's not Shal Tainug would be permitted. So that's how the Rav explained the distinction between Rechitza and Sicha. Again, a very sharp lamdas. But if you didn't follow that, I apologize. I probably didn't do the best job explaining it. But again, halacha lamaisa. So when it comes to Sicha, deodorant, we said there are some people who are machmir. Rav Yashav was machmir. Rav Willig is machmir. But most postgame are mekel. And that's why in the shul announcements, we do write that one may use deodorant on Tisha B'Av. And the Piskei Chuvos in source number 22 adds a couple of other practical applications. So while we would tell women not to put on makeup on Tisha B'Av, because that would be just like a man putting on cologne, those are for, again, like bodily fragrance and pleasure. However, when it comes to using bug spray, or people ask about sunscreen, those, according to this Svara, you would be allowed to use. According to Willy, you shouldn't use them. But according to the way that we're passing, that you could use deodorant, so you can use those, because they're not used for pleasure. They're just used for defense. You're trying to prevent the bug bites. You're trying, you know, to prevent the sunburn. That would be perfectly fine. Good? All right. Okay, two more topics. So first of all, leather shoes. So there is a machlokes between the Baal Hamor and the Ramban, whether... whether the shoe that you wear on Tisha B'Av and on Yom Kippur needs to be one where you experience like some level of discomfort, or it just needs to not be leather. So the minhag of Rov HaOlam, everybody, you know, practices that, like they're Ramban, they're just not leather. That's why you wear the Crocs, or you wear even, you know, Nikes, as long as they're not leather. What's the Yesoda Machlokas? So if you look at source number 24, the Rav explained that the Machlokas is really what the nature of the Isser is. Is the Isser the wearing of shoes, or is the Isser the specific type of shoe, right? Is it like the action of wearing shoes? Well, then it should apply to all shoes that provide a bare minimum of comfort, right? But if it's about the shoe, so then we'll draw the line at leather shoes. So the minhag seems to be that that people, you know, just wear something that's not leather. There is a valid chumrah to try to wear something that is less comfortable. I used to see Rav Shechter on Yom Kippur walking around the Beis Medrash in just socks. Because there are many achronim who try to be machmir not to wear something that is comfortable. But again, we would not pass in that way for the shul or for the hamon am. It's certainly the minog is just to wear something that's not leather. Now, you often get questions.
What does the Rav say, though, specifically here? How far does he take it?
So in explaining the machlokas, so he...
Was he just saying just no leather, or did he say that yeah, he just discomfort?
No, so he's just explaining the two sides.
He's elaborating.
He's explaining the two sides. He's saying that if you say no leather, then that means that you're concerned only about the shoe. If you say no comfort, you're concerned about the act of wearing shoes. And then there's a machlokas achronim in source number 23. I'm not going to go through all the different opinions. Again, but there are many achronim who were machmir, but we wouldn't be machmir for on a widespread scale, okay? But the questions that we often get is, what are considered leather shoes, yeah? So what the poskim write, this is Rav Moshe and Rav Ben Tzion Abba Shaul, is that if the leather doesn't have to do with the support of the shoe, if it's just like in addition to the on top of the shoe, or you know, it's like a secondary thing to the shoe, then that would be fine, even if it's made out of leather. However, if it's part of the support of the shoe, even if it's a minority, so even if the most of the shoe is not that way, but some of it is leather, that we would be machmir not to use. So you try to go out of your way not to have leather in the shoe. But again, if it's just on the laces or something like that, that would be fine. Okay, last thing. Also, you know, very halacha lemaisa, and something that comes up, you know, every year people want to know about this, is when it comes to tashmish hamita, to marital relations. So, of course, we know that one is not allowed to have marital relations on Tisha B'Av. And in source number 25, the Shulchan Aruch adds, Yashmi Sha'omer, Shalo Yishain B'Leil Tisha B'Av im Ishto P'mita, V'rachon Adavar Misham Leich Leich Amrina Nezira. So the Shulchan Aruch says that because a couple is not allowed to have marital relations on Tisha B'Av, therefore they should not sleep in the same bed on Tisha B'Av either. Because we, you know, the Leich Leich Amrina Lenazira means if you have a Nazir going around the vineyard, you tell him to go away. Meaning you put up a fence, don't sleep in the same bed because you don't know what's going to happen next. Fine. So that's Halacha P'suka. Certainly a couple should not sleep in the same bed on Tisha B'Av night. Now, the question is, do we apply any of the other harchakos, any of the other, you know, practices of distancing between husband and wife when one's wife is anida? Again, we're talking about Tisha B'Av even if she's not anida. If she were anida, there's nothing to talk about. Then Hilchos Nida apply. But if she's not anida, so then what applies? So we would not sleep in the same bed on Tisha B'Av night. And then in source number 26, the Mishnah Brura adds, V'ayin the kamon simen tarfesh tesvav, the asur liga be'ishto ki'ilu hi nida. So in Hilchos Yom Kippur, we say that husband and wife should not touch each other. They should act as if one's wife is anida. V'efsher duhu adin b'tisha b'av. The Darkei Moshe says that perhaps that would apply on Tisha B'Av as well. U'mikol makom b'yom yesh lahakel. The Mishnah Brura says that here we're going to differentiate between night and day. So when it comes to nighttime, the Mishnah Brura says that perhaps we should apply the same idea of Yom Kippur to Tisha B'Av, that a couple should refrain from touching each other at night. However, they may be lenient during the day. So that's how we would pass an halacha l'maisa. We wouldn't sleep in the same bed, and we would not touch each other at night. However, during the day, we can be lenient. Now, what's the reasoning for the leniency? In source number 27, the Shaar HaTzion writes that on Yom Kippur, couples don't touch each other throughout the entire day because people get dressed up for Yom Kippur, lechvod hayom, and everybody looks beautiful, and we're concerned that there's going to be a giroi hayetzer hara since everybody looks beautiful, so you might want to be affectionate with one another. So we put up a fence and we say not to touch each other at all. Masha'in kein b'tisha b'av, shaholchem b'begadim menuvalim, on Tisha B'Av, where we wear sackcloth. But if on Tisha B'Av people walk around, all nice, so then maybe we should be stringent during the day as well. So is what be mefakbek about here. Nowadays we don't wear sackcloth during the day, but I think most poskim side with the Mishnah Brura, just with what the Mishnah Brura writes, that during the day we are lenient, that we would be allowed to touch during the day. However, most posts can add here also that when it comes to the form of touch, it should be, a basic type of touch, but not no intimate or affectionate type of touch, a chibuk v'nishuk, that we should refrain from even during Tisha B'Av day, because as we know from the halachos of Harchakos, the Rambam views chibuk v'nishuk, intimate type of touch, as an extension of, tashmish hamita itself. The Torah says, ve'al isha b'nidas tum asa lo sikrav, don't come close to one's wife when she is anida. Why does the Torah formulate it as don't come close? Because it's trying to say that not only is tashmish itself prohibited, but in addition to that, having intimate type of touch would be prohibited as well. And therefore, that goes together with tashmish hamita, so we would refrain from that throughout the entire day. When it comes to just touching regularly, we would refrain at night, but one could be lenient during the day. There's a further machlokas at night, once you're not allowed to touch, so do we apply all the other harchakos too? Can you pass the keys? Can you pass can you pass something from husband to wife at night? So that is a machlokas. If you look in source number 28, Kafachaim writes that we should apply all the harchakos. However, Rav Yashiv writes that it would be mutter, that you would not have to apply all of the harchakos. I think halacha lemaisa, we can draw the line at touching. If you want to be machmir to apply all the harchakos, so erei shamayim can do so. But I wouldn't paskin for everyone that they would have to keep all the harchakos. But again, at nighttime, not sleeping in the same bed and not touching each other during the daytime, refraining from any intimate type of touch. So those are the five different inuyim with lots of different common questions with respect to each. And next week, Be'ez Hashem, we'll talk about the relationship between the night, the day, and the afternoon of Tisha B'Av, what changes during each stage.